Hello, this is Atat Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 16th, 2026, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page. Mullenix leaves lasting legacy. Retiring South Shore's principal made difference in many lives. This article is by Valerie Wells, Decatur. On the last day of school this year, a South Shore's school student had a bit of a meltdown when it was time to come in after recess. Principal Christy Mullenix, who is retiring in June, said she told the child that it was my last 20 minutes as a principal and asked him to please don't ruin it. Mullenix, a Decatur native, chose to become a teacher in the 1990s after doing a wide variety of other jobs between graduating high school and going back to school for a teaching certificate. She was a pharmacy technician, a nanny, worked for Travelers Insurance in Houston, and in workers' compensation in Austin, Texas, but she missed her family. She was a room mother at Copenberger School when the teacher didn't have a student's mom to fill that role and loved watching the teacher work, which made her decide that's what she wanted to do too. Her first position in 1997 was at South Shores, teaching a 5th-6th grade split class with 26 5th graders and only 6 6th graders. The 6th graders hated it, she said, laughing, but the 6th grader teacher already had 32 students, so she didn't want to go to 38, so I had these 6 6th graders, and they always felt like they were in a baby class. She calls it the hardest job for the most inexperienced human. She stayed at South Shores for 17 years, then taught writing at Parsons School, and one day a week at Enterprise School, served as assistant principal at Durfee Magnet School and Dennis School, and has been principal at South Shores for 5 years. Principals have to evaluate teachers, and it's important to her to be fair when she does that. For me, I've always said, I'll never forget what it's like being the teacher, Mullenix said. We put all this stuff on teachers, but we never take anything away. Just do more, do more, do more. Before district-wide air conditioning, windows had to be open, and bees would come in to the classroom, which made kids scream and duck. And she joked that teachers would pray for the sun to be beating on Johns Hill Magnet School's third floor. The district administration would take the temperature on that third floor to decide if school should be dismissed for heat. Some of the changes in education over the years have been good, but some haven't, she said. For a while, learning to write in cursive was dropped, but it's back. Her son Scott was in the group that never learned cursive at school, but she taught him at home. It's been a fabulous 5 years, Mullenix said, and I've loved every minute of it. I have wonderful memories. It's always fun when a kid I had then brings their kid. The other day I took a picture of a kindergarten graduation, and there were 3 generations, so it was super fun. Mullenix was one of the featured speakers at the 2026 That's What She Said event, sponsored by the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation, Hickory Point Bank, and the Lincoln Square Theater, where women share their stories. Christy Mullenix was an easy choice for the 2026 That's What She Said cast, said Natalie Beck, CEO of Heart of America Foundation, Illinois, after a remarkable career in education, including her leadership as principal of South Shores Elementary School. Christy has touched the lives of countless students, families, and educators. She has led with compassion, strength, and an unwavering belief in the potential of every child. Beyond her educational accomplishments, Christy has a wonderful sense of humor and one of the most contagious laughs you'll ever hear. She brings joy, warmth, and authenticity to every room she enters. As she closes this chapter of her professional career, I couldn't think of a better time to celebrate her story, her impact, and the difference she has made in the lives of so many. I'm incredibly grateful she said yes to sharing her story from the That's What She Said stage, just as she has said yes to so many opportunities to help our community over the years. Cassina Blockton was a student in Mullinix's class at South Shores. Her class had Mullinix as their teacher in fourth grade, and the next year she moved to fifth. When the kids heard that they'd have her again the next year, Blockton said, "We were ecstatic." Blockton and her friends babysat for Mullinix's youngest son, and Blockton considers Mullinix part of her family. "She was like a mom to me," Blockton said. "When I found out she was back at South Shores, I immediately sent my kids there. I'm glad my kids got to experience her too. She's always been a part of my life, and to see all the things she has accomplished, she was a real good role model to me. Someone I'm glad to have, to look up to, and have as part of my family." There's an H&R file photo. In this 2023 Herald and Review file photo, Principal Christy Mullinix holds a gold coin and explains how to use it to get a book from Inchy's Bookworm Vending Machine at South Shores Elementary School in Decatur. Students can earn a special coin through perfect attendance, good deeds, or raising their reading levels. This will be the last such sticker on the principal's office door at South Shores School. Principal Christy Mullinix is retiring this month. And it's just a welcome bumper sticker. It says, "Welcome 2025-26, Mrs. Mullinix." And it has her picture on the left. And it says, "Welcome" in many different languages. Valerie Wells, Herald and Review photo credit. Social project, residents rediscover community. This article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Sarah Lee, 36, and Kate Eagler, 37, have been lifelong friends since grade school, and even they needed a little help trying to find opportunities to keep busy or entertain. "It would be nice to have more opportunities for things to do here," Lee said. "Especially daytime stuff," Eagle added. "There's a lot of nightlife sometimes." The Macon County Mental Health Board has been focusing on how to encourage people to find peace and community bond. Other organizations and businesses feel the same. Marissa Hosier, Director of Contracting and Residential Services for the Macon County Mental Health Board, encourages people to find their own group or niche. "Some small group hangouts are a way to find a sense of community," she says. "Maybe it's something that they've always wanted to try," she said. The Macon County Mental Health Board created the Social Project to help people reconnect with others in the community. According to statistics gathered by the MCMHB, one-third of adults had 10 or more close friends in 1990. Today, that number has dropped dramatically as Americans spend more time online and less time together in person, the health board stated, promoting the social project. Studies continue to show that reduced social connection contributes to increased anxiety, depression, stress, sleep issues, and overall declines in mental well-being. The Mental Health Board recently hosted an event bringing together businesses, organizations, and agencies who were like-minded and wanted to encourage community groups and volunteer opportunities. Part of the problem, social media and other forms of entertainment are readily available for youth as well as adults. Hosier pointed out, "Everything is digital. There's a lot of screen time," she said, "so there's not that social interaction that we used to have. But community engagement isn't as hard to find as one might think. The fellows at Goodfellas Cigar Shop on Merchant Street want others to join them at the cigar hangout," owner Dustin Chapman and general manager Mike Hagan were invited to a community gathering, introducing themselves to others who may not know their business. "The men treat the cigars like fine wine. We teach them how to light it, cut it, and about the cigars," Chapman said. "How to enjoy it to the fullest," Hagen added. "The Goodfellas Lounge is set up to encourage a relaxed social gathering. That's the whole vibe of a cigar lounge," Hagen said. "Our lounge is an experience. If there wasn't that social aspect, people wanting to hang out, we wouldn't be in business," Chapman said. The Decatur Park District offers something for any age. "Go out and have fun," Recreational Supervisor for the Decatur Park District, Nicholas Boutrous, said during the gathering. "Going outside and being creative, that's what I want to see." Activities range from choir, pickleball, rock climbing, and beyond. If you can't find a connection with a business or organization, stay home or in your own hometown. Like many villages, towns, and cities, Forsyth offers community activities through various events, including the village market during the holidays and its public library. Games are designed to bring people together, according to Doran Lancrane, general manager of the Hidden Lair in Mount Zion. Players often bond when playing games such as Dungeons & Dragons. The Hidden Lair hosts crafts and game nights each day of the week. The dates, times, and other information are available on the business's website. When you play any of these types of games, you have to be very concise with whoever you're playing against about what you're going and what they can do, he said. Games and volunteer opportunities are just a few of the activities the Macon County Mental Health Board wants people to try. Try something new, make time for yourself, and explore those things, Hozier said. We get one precious life, and we hope that people will make time for themselves. Middle East deal eases energy shares. U.S. and Iran agreement lowers risk of supply disruption in Strait. This article is by Arunima Kumar, Pooja Menon, Leila Bassam, and Stephen Shear, Reuters. U.S. energy shares fell Monday as crude prices dropped after Washington and Tehran agreed on terms to end their months-long conflict and reopen the Strait of Hormuz, a vital oil transit choke point. The U.S. and Iran will sign a Memorandum of Understanding in Switzerland on Friday, and the Prime Minister of Pakistan, which helped mediate talks between the two sides. U.S. President Donald Trump said Sunday the Strait of Hormuz, which carries about a fifth of global oil consumption, would be open toll-free and that a U.S. naval blockade of Iranian ports would end. Brent crude futures fell 5.5% to $82.55 per barrel Monday morning, while the U.S. West Texas Intermediate crude was down 5.8% at $79.96 per barrel. Energy stocks surged after the conflict broke, driven by escalating fears of supply disruption through the strait. The S&P 500 Energy Index gained 23.4% so far this year. Markets will price in large optimism discount that normality is returning, although we would caution that flows are not likely to resume to anywhere near pre-war levels for months, and investors should follow how quickly Gulf producers are able to resume oil production and exports following damage from the war and whether more ships will enter the region, said Ashley Kelty, analyst at Panmure Liberum. Refining stocks rallied during the conflict as disruptions to Middle Eastern oil flows boosted fuel margins and drove stronger demand for U.S. fuel exports. Some analysts, however, warned that oil markets might be moving ahead of reality. The market remains much more responsive to optimistic Trump comments rather than global oil balances that could continue to tighten throughout the rest of the summer, Ritterbusch and Associates said in a note. Emotion and sentiment appeared to be overruling fundamentals as hopes for an end to the war were being prioritized over the current low level of global stock cover that is approaching critical levels, it said. Fighting in southern Lebanon eased on Monday after the U.S.-Iran deal to end the wider conflict was announced, but an Israeli drone strike killed one person, and authorities warned displaced people not to rush home as Israel said it would keep troops in the south. Lebanon suffered the deadliest spillover of the conflict between the U.S. and Iran, with almost 3,800 people killed and about 1.2 million people uprooted by an Israeli offensive against the Iran-backed Hezbollah group, which opened fire on Israel in support of Tehran on March 2nd. Pakistan, a key mediator between Tehran and Washington, announced that a deal was struck early on Monday, local time, that called for the immediate and permanent termination of military operations on all fronts, including in Lebanon. The declaration brought relative calm to southern Lebanon, Lebanese and foreign security sources said. An Israeli drone strike on a car in the southern Lebanese town of Kfar Tebnit killed the driver, a Lebanese security source and Lebanese state media said. There was no immediate comment from the Israeli military on the strike. The local and foreign security sources earlier said Israel significantly reduced its attacks, though some military fire was reported in southern Lebanese towns and a drone was heard above Beirut and its southern suburbs. A Hezbollah official told Reuters the group didn't carry out any operations since the deal was announced, adding that its position on the ceasefire was linked to Israel adhering to it. The official who decided to be named added that Hezbollah rejected Israeli freedom of movement in Lebanon and said Iran delayed signing the deal with the U.S. to monitor Israel's adherence to the ceasefire in Lebanon. Israel troops will stay. In a written statement Monday before Israel's drone strike, Hezbollah welcomed the U.S.-Iran deal, saying it resulted in a comprehensive ceasefire, including in Lebanon. The Tehran-backed group warned Israel that it would not accept any attacks that violate Lebanon's sovereignty or target its people, and said Lebanon's inclusion in the agreement reflected Iran's commitment to ending the war. In South Lebanon, municipal councils called on residents to hold off on returning home. Israel's Air Force has heavily bombed some towns over the last 3 months, and others closer to the frontier are still occupied by Israeli troops. Mona Mazeh, a displaced woman sheltering in Beirut's Hamra district, had no immediate plans to return to her village near the southern city of Tyre. "Frankly, we are hesitant. Israel cannot be trusted," she said. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz, whose country is not a party to the U.S.-Iran deal, said Israel would not withdraw from security zones in southern Lebanon, Gaza, and Syria, and that it would retaliate if Iran attacked Israel due to events in Lebanon. Katz said the security zone in southern Lebanon would be cleared of local residents, and all terrorist infrastructure, including houses in contact villages, a reference to Hezbollah. The Israeli military has been raising villages in southern Lebanon for weeks, claiming to be acting against Hezbollah militants embedded in civilian areas of the predominantly Shiite Muslim region. Hundreds of thousands of Lebanese Shiites are sheltering in other parts of the country. Moving on to the local and state page on A3. One jailed on sex assault charges, police minor abused in apartment stairwell. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. A Decatur man is denying charges he raped a juvenile teenage girl in the stairwell of a downtown apartment building. A sworn affidavit said Hugh M. Ritter was interrupted having sexual intercourse with the child in the complex in the 100 block of South Water Street. The affidavit said Ritter, 29, had previously been seen kissing and making out with the girl in the stairwell in the weeks leading up to April 23rd, when the alleged rape is said to have taken place. Decatur Police Department Officer Devin Luton, who signed the affidavit, said the witnesses who interrupted the sexual assault and called police later identified Ritter from a photo lineup. He was found and arrested May 13th and is pleading not guilty to two charges of committing aggravated criminal sexual abuse. Ritter is due back in Macon County Circuit Court on July 6th for a pretrial hearing and is being held in the Macon County Jail. A judge previously denied him pretrial release on the grounds he poses too great a danger to public safety. Three hit by gunfire in parking lot, Tony Reed, Decatur. Three male victims were shot and wounded, and one of them, a 17-year-old boy, sustained a serious injury when a burst of gunfire erupted on a crowded Decatur parking lot early Sunday. Sergeant Brandon Rolfs with the Decatur Police Department said at least 20 shots were fired, and the teenage victim was struck in the right hand and left forearm. Rolf said the injury wasn't life-threatening, but initial reports from the scene said the bullet had caused extensive trauma to the victim. The violence was centered in the 1300 block of North Illinois Route 48, where some 40 vehicles were gathered in the parking lot. Rolf said 911 calls just after 2 a.m. alerted police to a party that had turned into a confrontation between various individuals who were yelling and screaming at each other. Around 2:13 a.m., there was a follow-up phone call where a 911 caller was reporting that they had heard several gunshots fired in the parking lot, Rolfs added. Then there were more additional phone calls saying that people had actually been shot, and we were very grateful to the Macon County Sheriff's Office, who responded to assist the Decatur Police Department in dealing with this incident. Aside from the 17-year-old, police found a 22-year-old man who had been shot in the big toe of his right foot and discovered a third male victim, age 26, with a bullet graze wound to his abdomen. Rolf said police recovered 20 spent shell casings from both 9mm and 45 caliber handguns. The police don't know if that indicates an exchange of gunfire between different gunmen or that different gunmen were engaging the same target, but we do have at least two guns being fired and three people injured, Rolf said, and we have at least 20 shots that were fired which means a lot of innocent people could have been murdered. The search for the gunman involved continued Monday, and police urge anyone with information to call Crime Stoppers at 217-424-2734. Call the police at 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Rolfe said witnesses at the scene of the shooting were not cooperative, but that was the wrong attitude to take. Everybody should recognize that if they have information and they don't share it to put a stop to these shootings, someone they know and care about could be the next victim, he added. Wayne to run for Macon County Board, Valerie Wells, Decatur. Michelle Wayne has announced her candidacy for the Macon County Board. Wayne is running for a 2-year term representing District 5. She is a lifelong resident of Macon County and Hickory Point 3 Democrat Precinct Committee person. A graduate of Eisenhower High School and Richland Community College, she also holds an accounting degree from Illinois State University. She is a 30-year member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 146, and serves as Local 146's treasurer. On the Apprenticeship Committee, Women's Committee President, and Union Steward. She also serves as a board member for the Children's Museum of Illinois. Wayne is the daughter of former Macon County Board member Chairman Jay Dunn. Her priorities are addressing Macon County's declining population, declining healthcare access, technological protections, workplace safety and civil rights, economic development, and lowering property taxes. Wayne is seeking to replace Republican Linda Little, who is not seeking re-election. She was added to the November ballot by Democrat Party after no candidate from either party appeared on the primary election ballot. She will be challenged by Cody L. Parks of Mount Auburn, who was added to the ballot by the Republican Party. District 5 represents western Macon County and portions of Decatur and Hickory Point Townships. From the State House, Bear's setback raises questions on Pritzker's role. This is by Rich Miller. Rich Miller publishes Capital Facts, a daily political newsletter, and CapitalFacts.com. Governor J.B. Pritzker last week squarely placed the responsibility for passing a Chicago Bears stadium bill on the team itself and had some unsolicited lobbying advice for the Bears as he attempted to brush off his own session attendance issues. The governor continued to downplay his own role in passing a stadium or a stadium-related bill, saying it was the Bears management which decided to glom on to the mega projects bill that I proposed. He didn't exactly resist that move, and the Bears addition became the most highlighted part of the bill, to the point where lots of members believed Pritzker was using the Bears to pass an idea that had long ago hit a brick wall in both legislative chambers. Pritzker also said he'd be happy to call a special session, but only if the Bears figure out how they can get the legislature, both sides, around the same bill. And then he offered some belated statehouse lobbying advice. You've got to work the hallways, as you know, in a very, very busy session, Pritzker told reporters after accurately saying the Bears made some fumbles the past few years. You've got to really talk to every legislator if you want to get something done, he said. Pritzker said he's received calls from the Bears since session ended, but didn't say if he repeated that same advice. My associate, Isabel Miller, pointed out to the governor that he had repeatedly urged the General Assembly to move more quickly on the mega projects bill. Looking back, you do think spending more time in Springfield working out issues might have produced a different outcome? As I told my newsletter subscribers on June 8th, Pritzker was in Springfield for just 22 session days this past spring. I spent a lot of time in Springfield, the governor insisted, adding, I am not a legislator, and said he has a whole lot of responsibilities that aren't legislative. According to his legislative calendar, Pritzker was in Springfield 2 days in January and 2 days in February, 4 days in March and 3 days in April. During the crucial final session month of May, the governor was in town 11 out of 19 session days. The governor's calendar also showed that he had just 14 scheduled in-person meetings with individual rank-and-file legislators in Springfield during all of the spring session, including only one meeting on his calendar to talk about the Bears stadium with top negotiator Senator Bill Cunningham and Representative Cam Buckner the day before session was scheduled to adjourn. One top Pritzker insider explained that the governor often takes impromptu calls from members to talk about their projects and/or their bills, which wouldn't be on the official schedule. The insider also pointed to how the disjointed, deliberately uncoordinated legislative calendar made it difficult to schedule events at the executive mansion because the two chambers were so rarely in town together until May. He hosted four such events this year: Women Wear Pink, the Black Caucus, Latino Caucus, and Asian American Caucus. Pritzker has been sharply criticized for quite a while for focusing more on the national political front than on ongoing Illinois or governing Illinois, and while all or parts of several bills on his priority list did pass, the danger for Pritzker is that Bears' failure will overshadow everything else and highlight his national ambitions because it's something that transcends the State House. His attendance record, while not a complete look at his work, does him no favors. Isabel also asked the governor last week, going forward, was he planning to be more present in Springfield? "I'm in Springfield a lot," Pritzker replied, saying he often invites legislators to his appearances in their districts. However, his calendar shows he attended events outside Springfield on 18 different session days, which would make it difficult for legislators to attend. Pritzker also said he called several Republican legislators during the final portions of the session to make sure that they were on board with the Bears bill. He did not say if he phoned any Democrats. "I've said this before and I'll say it again. The governor has a very good executive staff, if too overburdened, but there's no substitute for a present governor. Legislators are generally a needy bunch. They see him on national TV during session and wonder why he isn't attending to them. That's simple statehouse reality and has been forever." Pritzker was right when he told reporters, "You've got to really talk to every legislator if you want to get something done." He might think about that advice during upcoming sessions. All right, and with that, we have come to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 16th, 2026. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.